Recently, we've witnessed the advocacy of socialism by virtually all the Democrat presidents or Democrat candidates for president. Now we're going to get a perspective on socialism from somebody who actually grew up in Ukraine under socialism, and she joins us now on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and it is great to have you on, Marina Medvin. You are an attorney and also a senior columnist with Town Hall and an occasional contributor with Forbes. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. And yes, socialism and climate is a fascinating combination, right? People generally would think the two don't belong together, but socialism, of course, is like a cure-all for liberal ideology, right? It cures all the world's problems. So socialism, I see it these days, is like a cowbell for the young. You know that SNL skit? I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell. So socialism is to cure all the world ills. You need more cowbell constantly, whatever comes up. I got to have more cowbell.
Yeah.
It's like the snake oil that young people can't just get themselves to stop buying. That's what socialism is. So this past week, we've been seeing a lot of socialism references, anti-corporation references by the environmentalists, by these protesters. And a great example is reading the tweets in response to Ken Cuccinelli. He posted a tweet saying that climate change seems to be just anti-capitalism, a socialist movement. And a lot of people respond back to him, well, of course, because the corporations are causing climate change, because it is capitalism that is responsible for climate change. That's apparently this ideology. Well, ironically, the largest socialist superpower today, China, is the world's greatest cause of pollution.
Yes.
It's the culprit of climate change, right? And China contributes the most, but yet they're socialist. And of course, that's an inconvenient truth, so nobody wants to talk about that. So liberals move on. This is never discussed. But socialists and socialism have always been the driving part behind environmental movements in the United States. And this goes back, interestingly enough, to the 1970s. So in 1970, the very first Earth Day was celebrated, April 22nd, which, by the way, coincidentally or not, happens to be Lenin's birthday. There's a lot of speculation whether or not that was done on purpose. There's no clear answer one way or another. So we leave it up to you. You could read a lot of blogs on the issue, but that is an interesting tidbit. Lenin from the USSR, that is his birthday. But the Socialist Party, so the Communist Party USA, for example, celebrates Earth Day as an anti-capitalist holiday. And this, for them, is the driving force behind curing the environment. It would be curing the world of capitalism. So, interestingly enough, cows surpass the allegedly evil corporations in their doomsday environmental contributions through farting, cow farting. Yes, but cows and farting cows are not as easily to scapegoat as corporations. Scapegoating corporations is easier, so socialists always concentrate on that. So we have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez talking about her Green New Deal and how corporations should be controlled, but she leaves out the cows, even though the cows are technically, by their measures, a greater threat. So we can't really use cows politically, so the corporations are responsible. So anyway, back in the 1970s, when Earth Day was started, we had another global environmental catastrophe looming, and that was global cooling, the opposite of global warming. Yes, the global cooling crisis. And then we said, oh, wait a minute, the science might be wrong. Let's move on to the 1980s, and we have the ozone hole. So that is actually the global threat, the ozone hole. And then the ozone hole closes, and according to NASA, by the way, it's not even a hole. It's just a thinning of the atmospheric levels, et cetera. We use the word hole for political purposes, even though there was no hole, just a thinning. And then actually, if we go back in time, 11,000 years ago, there was another climate change that, by the way, CNN featured in 2018. 11,000 years ago, climate change, a catastrophic climate change, and yet humans survived. So we survived our little political movements, and we survived actual climate change.
Okay, wait, and let's stop for a second. If you talk about 11,000 years ago, climate change, like maybe Ice Age or something like that, human activity Certainly, I don't see how that would contribute to it in terms of post-industrial revolution. I mean, the industrial revolution only goes back to the 1780s or 1770s, thereabouts, something like that, in Manchester, England. And in fact, part of the whole theory of global warming, well, it used to be called global warming, now they change it to climate change, but the climate is always changing. And so the hubris to me of the whole thing is the idea that man's activities, you know, are what are causing this. I mean, I've heard that a lot of the scientists say, well, in reality, it has to do with the sun and sunspots and things like that, that if there is such a thing as global warming. And then I've talked to other scientists who say, well, they're not even sure if it's bad for the globe to get a little bit warmer anyway, because we have more crops then. The global cooling is a lot more dangerous for human beings. More people die in the cold than in the heat.
And by the way, we did survive the Ice Age. And we did that without modern technology. So I feel rather good about surviving all upcoming weather changes with the technological advances we have today that we didn't have back then.
Sure.
Right?
Now, what is this? I mean, the idea that young people like Greta Thunberg have been scared to death that their future essentially is deprived. I mean, imagine if you're told, and you really believed it, you only had 12 years to live, okay? You're going to die in 12 years. And you're, what, 16 or something like that? My goodness, she'll never, she wouldn't even live till she was 30 years old. And these adults are responsible for it. And it's, I don't see how this lie being told over and over and over, the people who tell the lies can't see the damage that they're doing to millions of young people.
I don't think they care. I don't think they care about them. It's a manipulative tool, right? So climate and weather doomsday tales are a political tool used by socialists to scare ignorant people and young people into ideological submission. So Greta's example, A, she's genuinely terrified.
Yeah.
As are many of her peers, when you watch the political debates, you see young people asking questions, and they truly look afraid. And that level of fear is a show of propaganda success.
Yeah.
America's liberal politics in general are a show of liberal propaganda success. And I think that's the goal. The goal is to win this political movement, let socialism win, and then worry about the detrimental effects later. They are not concerned with impact on the young minds or whatever it may have, whatever it may cause in the future as far as the fear and the depressive effects. They're not concerned with that. They're concerned with winning a political battle.
Wow.
That's what this is.
Yeah, I've heard that the environmentalist movement, the way, you know, like that have suckered people like Greta Thunberg to believing it, is like a watermelon. It's green on the outside, but it's red on the inside. Talk a little bit about talk a little bit about socialism in terms of your own personal background. I understand until you were 9, you were living in Ukraine. What was it like? What was it like to go to the grocery stores? What was it like to go to school? What was it like in general?
I was there until I was 7, but I remember it very well because my father did a very good job reminding me and making me understand what my world was like. The very last day before we left, my last day in the Soviet Union, my father took me to what was a grocery store. And it was strange because unlike in America where you go to grocery stores every day, you don't go to grocery stores in the Soviet Union because there's nothing to buy. So when he brought me to the store, I thought it was strange. And he said, I need you to do something for me. I need you to remember this store. I need you to look around, and I need you to memorize it. So I did what my dad told me to do. I looked at the shelves, and I looked at the walls, and it was just white and empty. There was nothing there. My dad said, look and memorize. So I did, and so this is what I memorized. Empty shelves, except for one item. It was on the very top shelf. It was a glass jar of pickled green tomatoes. That's what was on there. And that was it. And I thought this was the strangest thing. And then after he left, he said, I want you to remember this for the rest of your life because you're going to be living in America and you will never see anything like this ever again. And I didn't quite understand that. He said, we're going to come to America and there's going to be food on the shelves. And I didn't know what that meant because I've never seen anything like that. And there's no TV programming that shows you, oh, by the way, look at America, they're better than us, right? Socialist TV is going to be monitored by the government, and they're not going to let you see what America looks like. So I had no idea, no visualization, no conception of what America looks like, what food, what grocery stores look like, what plenty looks like, what choice looks like. Wow. I didn't have that conception. So when we came to the U.S., the first place we visited after getting off that plane was a grocery store, and it was in New Jersey, outside of New York Airport. We go to this grocery store, and there's food everywhere, and I look at the fruit and the vegetables and the boxes of cereals and snacks, and I don't understand it, and I just remember being very confused, and it was the strangest feeling. It was truly abundant, and it was in a way that I did not understand before, and I saw abundance. I saw choice. I saw capitalism, right? That's what I really saw looking back at it. And it really made an impression on me, the days side by side, you know, the white empty shelves that my dad told me to memorize, and then seeing those grocery shelves in America and food everywhere. You could just choose what you eat, and you could have as much of it as you want, as much as you can buy, and it was amazing. It was nothing like I could have imagined. And that was my perspective in terms of comparing a socialist country with a capitalist country. It's in the grocery stores for me, just because that's what my dad showed me when I was younger.
Wow.
So that's my experience understanding America. I do understand capitalism. I value it. I fight for capitalism now that I'm grown because I see how amazing it is. Capitalism is the only ethical system in the world. It's the only system that treats everyone equally because it doesn't care about your skin color, right? Because capitalism cares about one color, and that's green. It cares about profit, and it cares about people maximizing their strengths and rewarding their successes. Everyone does what they're best at, and they trade. And it's an amazing system. And I read a lot from Ayn Rand, obviously. That's a big influencer in my ideology. And Ayn Rand comes from a similar background from the Soviet Union, and she understood this and certainly valued America. And so that's where I'm coming from when I say socialism is bad. Yeah. Because I see, or I have seen, socialism in realization. I've seen the reality that is socialism.
Well, your father is very wise. Now, we have 2 minutes left to go. Marina, how do we get the young people today to realize socialism is not good? We don't want to go down that path.
Take away their choices, maybe, because that's really, as a young person, for me, the real difference that I saw is this lack of choice, lack of opportunity. You know, they go into stores and they pick whatever snacks they want. They go on their iPhones and they pick whatever apps they want to buy, whatever games they want to play. And they don't realize that every single one of those things is a choice provided to them through capitalism. That's capitalism.
Yeah.
Having a food that's delivered to your porch because you want to buy it right now from Amazon Prime Now, and you ordered it 2 hours ago, that's capitalism. That's the capitalism. And they don't understand that because, honestly, I think it's the schools. We've got a lot of socialism in our schools. That's a topic for a different day.
Sure.
But they are just absolutely brainwashed from a young age, and it's hard for them to bounce back.
And
they
as far as
want to do.
Right, and as far as the climate change thing, that I mean, honestly, there are definitely scientists. Maybe they're in the minority, or actually, they're probably not in the minority. It's just that the people who advocate catastrophic, man-made global warming or climate change, they have the microphones, they have the universities, they have the media, they have the so they have the platform. But all we have is the people and the truth. But we have 30 seconds to wrap up. Medvin.me, M-E-D-V-I-N.me is your website for more information. Have a 20 seconds, a closing thought about capitalism and socialism in the future.
Actually, I want people to go to Wikipedia and look for a list of scientists who disagree with scientific consensus on global warming, and they'll see just how long that list is and the phenomenal schools that these scientists go to and they or teach at. And this list will show how many people disagree with man-made global warming.
Okay. Thank you so much for being with us, Marina. All the best.
Thank you.
Okay, great.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.